All right, we're going to, welcome back, everyone.
Thank you.
And we're going to start off in our usual fashion with 2 minutes of meditation. Starting now. Please repeat after me. Spirit, we acknowledge your presence with us. We ask that you guide us and direct us. Please set aside everything we think we know about resentment inventory, fear inventory, and sex inventory. So we may have an open mind. And a new experience, with all these things. Help us see the truth. Amen.
So we're going to move into step four, which is about inventory. There's three of them, but before T jumps off with that, there's something I'd like to read. Again, it's from A Tear and a Smile by Cahill Gibran. And it's entitled, A Visit from Wisdom. In the stillness of night, wisdom came and stood by my bed. She gazed upon me like a tender mother and wiped away my tears and said, I have heard the cry of your spirit, and I have come to comfort it. Open your heart to me, and I shall fill it with life. Ask of me, and I shall show you the way of truth. And I said, Who am I, wisdom? And how came I to this frightening place? What manner of things are these strange patterns, these thoughts that pass in flight? These words composed by desire and sung by delight. These conclusions and grievous and joyous, they embrace my spirit and envelope my heart. Eyes which my depths and flee my sorrows. Voices mourning my days and chanting my littleness. What are they? This youth that plays with my desires, mocks my longings, forgetful of yesterday's deeds, rejoicing in paltry things, scornful of the morrow's coming. What is this world that leads me whither I know not? This earth that opens wide its mouth to swallow bodies and lets evil things to dwell on its breast. This creature, satisfied with the love of fortune, which beyond its union is the pit. Life brings pleasure of a minute with a year of repentance. What is he who flows with the rivers of folly to the sea of darkness? O wisdom, what manner of things are these? And she answered, saying, you would see, human creature, this world through the eyes of a god. You would seek to know the secrets of the hereafter with the thinking of men. Yet in truth, is this the height of folly? All that you see with your eyes was and is for my sake and your sake. The strange patterns and thoughts, the words, the conclusions, grievous and joyous, are the seeds that the past did scatter in the field of the spirit to be reaped by the future. That youth will open the door of your heart to let light in. This earth with the ever open mouth is the savior of your spirit from the body slavery. This creature whom you see is ignorant and small is the same who has come from God's side to learn pity through sadness and knowledge by the way of darkness. Wisdom put her hand on my burning brow and said, go forward and do not tarry. Go and have not fear of thorns on the path. For they deem naught but lawful save corrupted blood. A visit from wisdom. Hopefully some of these things that I read you understand in the language that they use to write it, but it's very appropriate to some of the stages that we move through in recovery. T is going to begin to take you through the process of resentment inventory. I'll pick up with fear inventory and then sex inventory.
Thanks, Mike. I'm going to read a little passage about fear. I'm not going to cover the fear inventory, but I do believe that they stuck the fear inventory in the middle. Maybe they didn't do it for a reason. It just landed in the middle. But I would like to think they did it for a reason. Because underlying resentments is this fear of not getting something I demand for security. And underneath my gross misconduct in relationships is a fear of being found out, a fear of losing control, and a fear of being alone. So I want to read this. It's by a woman named Marianne Williamson. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You're a child of the Creator. You playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine, as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in every single one of us. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. And for me, I have found that the antidote for fear is a spiritual awakening. The expectancy of God in everything is the way I look at it. I expect my Creator to be with me along the entire path, regardless of what happens. Regardless of what I act, I do some goofy, stupid shit and today. It happens. But my Creator's with me, and there's lessons to be learned. Sometimes I learn the lesson, and I have the experience. Other times I don't learn a lesson, so I'm destined to repeat the experience until the lesson is learned. I'm also a guy who believes that fit spiritual condition has to do with relationships, not with how much I meditate, not with how much I pray, how many guys I sponsor, how many meetings I go to. It's based on the condition of the relationships in my life. So if resentment imagery says if we're shut off from the sunlight of the Spirit, if we're resentful. That has to do with how I'm interacting with, you know, these. You all are manifestations of God. And if I'm cut off from you, I'm cut off from the Creator. So it has to be about relationships. So this is a book called On Relationship by one of my greatest influences, a guy named Jiddu Krishnamurti. Life is a process of constant movement in relationship. And without understanding relationship, we shall bring about confusion and struggle and fruitless effort. So it is important to understand what we mean by relationship, because society is built out of relationship and there can be no isolation. There is no such thing as living in isolation. That which is isolated will die. So our problem is what we mean by relationship. By isolation, I mean that we are all in all the time seeking security, gratification, and egoic power. After all, each one of us in our relationship with another is seeking gratification on some level. And where there is search for comfort, for security, whether it be in a nation or an individual, there must be isolation. And that which is in isolation always invites conflict. Anything that resists is bound to produce conflict between itself and that which it is resisting. And since most of our relationship is a form of resistance, we create a society that inevitably breeds isolation and hence conflict within and without that isolation. Now, if we examine our life, our relationship with one another, we will see that it is a process of isolation, as much as we don't want to see it. We are really not concerned with another, though we talk a great deal about it. Actually, we are not concerned at all. We are related to someone only as long as that relationship gratifies us, as long as it gives us a refuge, as long as it satisfies some need within us. But the moment there is a disturbance in the relationship that produces discomfort in ourselves, we discard the relationship. In other words, there is a relationship only as long as we are gratified. This may sound harsh, but if you really examine your life very closely, you will see it as a fact. And to avoid a fact is to live in ignorance, which can never produce the right relationship. I think it is very important to understand this, because the man or woman who wants a peaceful world, a world in which there are no wars, no appalling destruction, no catastrophic misery on an immeasurable scale, must understand this fundamental question. As long as you, the individual, seek power, however much or however little, whether as a prime minister, a governor, a lawyer, a boyfriend, a husband, a son, etc. That is, as long as you desire the sense of domination, protection or defense, the sense of compulsion, the sense of building power and influence, surely you are bound to create a society that is the result of this isolating process. Because egoic power in its very nature is isolating and it's separating. Shut off from the sunlight of the Spirit. So, let's go to our big book. So what we're going to do here is we're going to now do some work. We're going to guide you through writing inventory. So you can either write on it, and I'm going to guide you through one piece. I'm just going to need you to reflect for a second and find that one person, and we'll just look at people, not institutions or principles, that one person that you're resentful. And let's say you have some spiritual fitness in your life and your mind will not allow you to access a resentment. Let's talk. Who's getting on your nerves right now? It could be Mike. It could be me. Right? Who's annoying you right now? Let's use some other words besides resentment. The longer I stay clean and sober, the more difficult it is for me to find resentments. But when I say who's getting on my nerves, the names just start to roll off the end of the pen. All right, so I'm on page 64. halfway down through the last paragraph. In dealing with resentments, we're going to set them on paper. We list people, institutions, principles with whom we are angry. We ask ourselves why we are angry. So I'm just going to give you a best practice. When I sponsor people and I give them this instruction, I tell them this. I say, you're going to go and put a timer on for me. 30 minutes, that's all you get. Ask God to show you the truth about what blocks you from Him. And then whatever comes, people and institutions and principles, write it on the piece of paper. If it comes off the pen, do not question it. It came off the pen for a specific reason. When the 30 minutes is up, that's it. You're ready to start writing inventory. I don't give them more than 30 minutes. I got to get them through the process. See, we think back in the day that they wrote these massive one-inch binder inventories to get at their grosser handicaps. Every time I listen to a fifth step, a guy comes to me with like 50 resentments. I'm like, we're not reading all that. What we can do is we're going to start reading. And then somewhere between the 15th and the 20th resentment, the second, third, and fourth column starts to sound very familiar. We've discovered the grosser handicaps. The only thing that's changing at that point is column one. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
We need to get at grosser handicaps. So, what I want you to do is your column one is put the person's name. And so we're going to walk you through this. We're not going to take a lot of time. Just close your eyes. First name that pops in your head, someone's getting on your nerves, somebody's annoying you, just put it down. You can do this on your notepad on your phone if you don't have paper. It's fine. So you're going to list the person with whom you are angry, resentful, let down by, annoyed by, etc. We all good? That was quick. We know we're in the right place, right? All right, now you're going to ask yourself why you were angry. Now, I want to point something out. Mr. Brown, on page 65, his attention to my wife, told my wife about my mistress. Brown may get my job at the office. First off, Mr. Brown should have his ass kicked, right? That's right off the bat, I can see that. But what really fascinates me is that Bill, in this example, those are three pretty bad resentments, right? Severe. He used 19 words. So now in your second column, you only get 19 words to describe. You're taking the other person's inventory. Why are you resentful at this person? Why do they get on your nerves? Try to be clear, specific, and concise, and you may not need 19 words. So this is column two that we're doing right now. You guys could just look up, let me know that you're done. So we've asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, we're going to find that it's our self-esteem. That's one thing that's going to be in the third column. Pocketbooks is going to be in the third column. Ambitions is going to be in the third column. Personal relationships, including sex, is going to be in the third column. And then we say we're hurt or threatened. So we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we're going to set opposite each name and our injuries. Was it our self-esteem? They've already mentioned that one. Security is a new one, so that's number six. Our ambitions have already been mentioned. Our personal or sex relations have already been mentioned, which had been interfered with. We're usually as definite as this example. If you go down to the bottom of the example next to my wife, off to the right, there's pride. That's the seventh area of self. So, remember back in the third step, it says hereafter in this drama of life, we decided that God's going to be the director and we're going to be the actor. And then later on in the fifth step, they talk about stage characters. And they love to talk about the stage and the lights and the scenery and all these other things. So we're going to look at this as the theater. All right? Here's why I have to write inventory. Because I have a script. Let's say all of you are important people in my life. I have a script for each of you. It sits in this box right here. And I sit up in my throne, and you are down in the audience. And see, the way I interact with you on a daily basis, I assume I delivered your script to you, but the scripts are still here. But I treat you like you should know your script for how you're supposed to act in my life. Okay? This is why we have so much trouble in personal relationships. And so, let's keep reading. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. So here's another best practice perhaps for you. When I sponsor a newcomer, I don't have them go back to their earliest childhood memories and begin inventorying there. I have them start now because it says we went back through our lives. If I want to go back to the kitchen from where I am right now, I need to get up and go that way and back from here, the present. So I always have them start with the present and work their way back. And then when they can't, you know, if you're struggling for 30 minutes to think of another resentment, the well's gone dry. Remember, it's about discovering grosser handicaps. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that the world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we restored ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As and more, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with addicts and alcoholics, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. So we all know the grave means death, and they're throwing an adverb in there, infinitely grave, which I find interesting. And in the very next sentence, they threaten your life twice in the same paragraph. We find that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of crack and meth and heroin and alcohol returns, and we drink or use again. And with us, to drink or use is to die. So three times, one paragraph, life-threatening, resentment. The long version is, you know, I begin to have these expectations. I have a value system that I just want you to live by. And I want you to fit into my idea of how you're going to act. But you don't. And so I struggle. And if I have enough of those in my life, enough sideways relationships, I eventually get cut off from God, and I eventually return to my friend crack cocaine, and then I die. That's the long version. The short version is if you resent, you die. And, I mean, I've been here long enough now to watch people die behind a resentment.
Can I ask you that question, Mike? That thing we're doing with the script, what you're saying, tell me if I'm wrong, that's undisclosed. I want all these people to behave and act and react to me in a certain way, but I never disclose it. I'm like pretending I'm a psychic or something, and nobody knows what the fuck I want anyway. So basically, I'm setting myself up for the resentment because I never tell anybody what I want anyway.
Hit the nail on the head.
Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Good example, good description. So we're going to consider it carefully now. I got to tell this story. Mike was doing a retreat in Georgia, and he checked in at registration, and he told me some story about somebody, and I was like, "Did you cop a resentment?" And he turns to me. I don't know if you remember that. He goes, "That's the dubious luxury of normal men. The grouch and the brainstorm are not for me." And you just walked off.
No, I don't remember.
We don't. You know, they are the dubious luxury of normal men. For us, they're life-threatening. So let's consider the third column carefully. Here's what we're going to do. You're in your third column. You have column one, the person's name. Column two is why you're angry, let down, you feel slighted. Column three is going to have seven things we're going to inventory. This is called an extended third column. It's the theater of the lie. This is where you're going to see the tragedy of the ego. The first area of self we're going to inventory is your self-esteem, okay? And it has a specific format. It's the role you've assigned yourself in this play. I am. Okay, depending on who your resentment is against, let's say it's a resentment against my ex-wife, a lot of times I'm going to write it from the perspective of, I'm the best husband around. I'm the best provider around. I don't know what your situation is, but it's going to start off with, I am. It's how you feel or think about yourself in this situation. And if you've been around for a minute, I'm going to give you a hint. In early recovery, it's a combination of low self-esteem and high self-esteem. The longer you stay around, you're going to be writing a lot of this from high self-esteem. At least it's been my experience. But whatever comes, comes. So the format is, I am. And it's what you think about yourself in this one act in the play. This is just one act between you and this person you're engaging in the theater. Whatever the situation is at work, at your home group, at home, with your extended family, whatever it is, I am. And how do you feel or think about yourself in this one act in the play?
In the context of the resentment?
In the context of that one resentment.
Okay.
Yeah. You could look up for me when you're done, give me a hint, and I'm going to share a piece of inventory, my inventory, with you as we walk through this to give you an idea. So this person shall remain nameless since we're recording this, and the resentment is he wants to start his own sober living residence. That's why I'm ticked. He's an employee. He was an employee of mine and wants to start his own program. My self-esteem. I'm a businessman and a friend that demands respect and loyalty. That was my self-esteem. I'm a businessman and a friend that demands respect and loyalty. So I've got two stage characters. I've got a businessman and a friend that's involved in this resentment. Okay? Does it make sense? Everybody ready for the next one? Pride. Pride is different from self-esteem. It's how I want others to see me in this resentment or this situation. And it's going to start off like this. Others should, because the word should implies a judgment and disrespect. Others should, or no one should. So my resentment inventory for pride says, others should always be loyal to me no matter what. And please, if you have a question, ask.
This is still third column, right?
Still third column. Seven areas of self in the third column.
It's called extended third column. You take it a step further. Actually, extended third column, you put on the God suit. You're approaching the resentment from being God.
Thank you. All right. So we're going to move on to the next area of self, which is ambition. And this is very simple. Okay, I look at ambition and security a little different. Ambition is, what's the outcome I want? Security is a little different. Security is going to be the next one. Security is something I need internally. But what's the outcome here? I want him to fail. That's it.
What's the word for
it? It starts off, I want. What do you want out of this? What do you want? It's an outcome in this resentful situation that you find yourself in.
Like self-esteem, pride.
Ambition. Ambition. I'm sorry, I may have left that out. Ambition. What do you want? I want blank. And for me, I want him to fail.
Real simple. It's not complicated either. Say the resentment is, owes me money. What do you want? I want the blank blank to pay me my money. That's it. We don't have to pay blank blank, do we? No. That was a joke, y'all. Do we need to turn on the lights? Do we need to turn on the lights or something? Y'all like sleep. Have sleep. Huh?
We ready? Next is security. This is, I need blank to be okay. Security. What do you need to be okay? And for me, I need him to respect me to be okay. I need him to respect me to be okay.
Not just to be okay, I probably need this for me to live. Because what happens is that you see it affects your spirit. Your security and your self-esteem go to the root of your being. Because there's certain things you believe that you need in order to live. Just totally F you up. I've decided to stop using bad language.
When did you just decided this today?
Yeah, I just decided this a little while ago. Yeah, for today, just for today.
If you're starting to notice the absolute nature of this third column sets you off in isolation, like in the book I was reading. The ego, one of the ego's jobs is to defend and protect. I get it. There's aspects of the ego that are positive. You know, there's no way we can't defeat the ego. There's traces of the ego in everything that we do. This process will put the ego in its right proximity in the back instead of out here running the entire damn show. So it tends to be more capacity for us to acknowledge the presence of God when we're not totally consumed by the ego running the show. And to me, inventory is something that's helped increase my capacity to do that. So let's move on to the next one. So we've done self-esteem, pride, ambition, security. Now we're going to do personal relationships. And a personal relationship is my deep-seated belief about what this relationship should look like. So if you're writing about your wife, it's a real wife should do this in this situation. If you're writing about your employer, a real employer would do this. If you're writing about someone at your home group, a real home group member would do this. If you're just writing about a member of CA, a real CA member would do this. If you're writing about one of your kids, a real son would do this. For me, I put a real friend and a real employee remains loyal to the very end throughout eternity and does exactly what I want him to do. Yeah, you start to have some fun with this shit, but this stuff is floating around, guys, inside. Guys and gals, it's floating around in my consciousness, in my unconsciousness. I'm making decisions on this horseshit, and I didn't say I wasn't going to swear. So this is very important. We live unaware lives. This stuff that's coming off the pen, on some level, it's lurking in the darkness, in the shadows, within, it's lurking.
Deepak says ego power.
So this one would start as a real man, or not a real man, a real employer, a real employee, a real member of CA, a real home group member. Make sense?
Deepak says, ego power seeks to control and dominate. Ego follows us like a dark shadow. Its power is intoxicating and addicting, but ultimately destructive. Ego, edging God out. What do you do when you edge God is not in the picture whatsoever? Who are you? Who are you?
All right. Are we done with personal relationships? All right. So now sex relations. Now, Mike and I do this a little bit different. The way I do it, if I'm right, if my resentment's against a woman, I have a deep-seated belief about the gender, that a real woman should do this in this situation. If you're writing about a real man should do this. So for me, it starts off a real man. So mine would be, is a real man doesn't slither like a snake and get himself fired in order to do what he wants in the end. This is still third. This is my sex relations. I'm writing about an employee. And I said a real man doesn't slither like a snake and get himself fired in order to do what he wants to do. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
So it has nothing to do with having sex.
No.
Am I the only one that thought that sex involved like my sexual conduct?
Well, some people do. I've just found it more effective because sex inventory is not about the pokey pokey. Okay? It's just not. Sex inventory is about my gross misconduct in relationships. In the sex inventory questions on page 69, not once does it say, did you sleep with this person? It says, were you selfish, inconsiderate? Did you arouse jealousy, bitterness, suspicion? Whom have you hurt? What should you have done instead? None of those had to do with the sexual act, intercourse, none of it. It's really about our conduct in relationships. Yeah.
What is that? My primary identity. Context of this part, I'm sorry, I didn't put my own head like usual. What were you saying? I put my mission statement almost of what I think in my sickness, what the relationship should look like.
For the sex relations?
Yeah.
Okay, so do you have personal relationships or just that? They're just about the person, the member of CA, whatever you're writing about. In sex relations, let's say you're writing about a man. In every interaction we have a deep-seated belief about how a man should conduct himself in this situation. If you're writing your resentments against a woman, you have a deep-seated belief about how a woman should act in this situation. And that's a lot of our problems. We've got these value systems that are so rigid that have never been investigated, that we just grew up with, that we've never been curious about. Where did we get them from? And so that's what this is. This is just uncovering all that, and we call it the tragedy of the ego. This is the world domination right here for us. This is how we dominate the world and play God. All right, and the last one is pocketbook. This is easy, time and money. Time equals money for a lot of people. So if your time has been infected, if you've wasted tons of hours plotting the destruction of this person, you may want to say yes, your pocketbook was affected.
What if it wasn't?
Yeah, that's the
only... What if it's your pocketbook?
No, we're looking at your pocketbook right now.
So do I write it still? Like I didn't.
Yeah, like what I wrote. He threatens my financial security.
Like for mine, my pocketbook's not affected.
No, you don't have to write. This is the one I leave blank sometimes. Yeah. And that is the end of the third column. And now we're going to do something very, very important. Nope. I'm not. Sometimes I do that. We're going to do this in this example. But I do want to go to the bottom of page 66. Because now we're going to talk about the fourth column. So this next paragraph where it says we turn back to the list, this is where they start describing the fourth column in the big book. So now you've made your first column, second column, third column. Now we're going to turn back because this holds the key to the future. We're prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We begin to see that the world and its people really dominate us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, and I love this, fancied or real, imagined or real, has the power to actually kill. How can we escape? We see that these resentments must be mastered, but how? I can't wish them away any more than crack cocaine or alcohol. So this is our course. This is the bridge between the third column and the fourth column. So when I sponsor guys, when they're writing inventory, they specifically, once you're done with the third column, you stop and you do this. This is our course. We realize that the people who wrong us are perhaps spiritually sick. And so I say to myself, God, make me aware that this individual that worked for me is perhaps spiritually sick. Though I don't like his symptoms and the way he disturbs me, he, like myself, is sick too. God, help me show him the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. We say that prayer before we start writing the fourth column. It's from the bottom of page 66 to the top of 67. We call this the forgiveness prayer or the sick man prayer. If you're going to look at this from an entirely different angle, the best way for me to see that is to understand that they can be spiritually sick just like me. So if I have defects of character, these other people have defects of character. What I tend to do is I treat you like you shouldn't have any defects. I'm okay. It's okay for me to have defects, but you can't have any defects when you interact with me.
Is that wrong?
That's how we operate at times. That is how we operate. So I want you to say that prayer to yourself. Ask God to help you be aware that these individuals are perhaps spiritually sick. And we ask God to help us show them the same patience, tolerance, and pity that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. Now that you've said that prayer, we're going to go down to the specific instructions of column 4. Specific. It says, referring to the list again, putting out of your mind the wrongs others had done. So that means the first and second and third column no longer exist.
See that again, please?
Putting out of your mind the wrongs others had done, which is columns 1, 2, and 3, boom. They don't exist at this moment. You're going to resolutely look for your own mistakes. Notice they didn't say you're going to look for your part. Haven't said that yet. You're going to look for your own mistakes. Where have you been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation has not been entirely your fault, you're going to try to disregard the other person involved entirely. Remove them from the equation, which means they can't have a part, which means you don't have a part. You got the whole thing. Right? Because you know what happens to alcoholics and addicts? We love to throw around this watered-down version of AA and CA. We talk about our part. You hear it in the meetings all the time, don't you? My part. Here's what happens with alcoholics and addicts. Let's say this is a full-on situation, right? And we're gonna look at our part. And then we're going to take our part into the nine-step amends. You know, that's our part. This is the other person's part. You guys understand what I'm saying? And what's really important when I take guys to the steps, they don't have parts. You take full responsibility. Because what happens, sometimes the mind will tell you, well, if I'm going to go make this nine-step amends to clean up my part, naturally the other person should want to clean up their part. And they don't. And you walk out of a nine-step amends with a little bit of resentment. Because I tell you, I made some amends to some people that wronged me far more than I wronged them. But I did it because I had to get free, and they needed to get free, and I wasn't there for my part. I disregarded entirely, and I was there to clean up my mistakes and where I was at fault. That's it. No parts. Okay? So, where were we to blame? The inventory is ours, not the other man or woman's. We see our faults, we list them and place them before us in black and white. We admit our wrongs honestly, and we'll run these matters straight. So here's what your fourth column is. First thing in the fourth column, what are you afraid of? Fear. And I do it in a specific way, so I want fear listed first. What are you afraid of? In this one act in the play with this person, setting aside entirely what the other person has done, what are you afraid of? So mine was I'm afraid of my business failing and his business succeeding.
But I thought you're not supposed to worry about this.
Well, this is just the fear. It can be anything. Whatever you're afraid. You're setting aside. Those first three columns no longer exist. You're just looking for you've been at fault now. In this one act in the play, what's the fear? What are you afraid of? In my act in the play, there was a fear that my business would fail, and there was a fear that his business would succeed. That's it. That's the fear. That's what I was afraid of.
That's what you were afraid of.
I don't know. Let's see what the rest of it says. So just what are you afraid of? What are you afraid of in this one act in the play with this resentment towards this person? What's the fear? All right. Next is dishonesty. So there's three types of dishonesty. There's outright lies of commission, that means I lie. There's lies of omission, I leave information out. And then there's delusion. I can't tell the difference between what's true and false. Lies of commission, just an outright lie, which I have in this case, and then I have a delusion. A lie of omission is I'm leaving information out so I can control the outcome. So my dishonesty was I lied to him about there being a day when he would run the launching pad for me. Delusion, he's out to get my job, and he's out to take my customers. That was a delusion. But that was fueling a lot of it. That delusion, my friend, who asked me what fueled that resentment, fueled it more than anything else.
You almost want to put delusion first.
The way it was described to me is the fear drives some type of delusion and dishonesty, which is ultimately going to end up in a selfish attitude and a self-seeking action. You can write these in any order you want. I just like the way they flow like that. All right. Dishonesty. Everybody done? All right. Next is selfish. Selfish is an attitude to me, more so than an action. But you can write it as an action, but how do you think you were selfish in this situation? I always look at selfishness as I've got the eight ball, and you ain't getting any of it. Self-seeking is you have the eight ball, and I'm going to do whatever I can to get it. So... I don't know if that helps.
So selfish again?
Yes. So mine, selfishness is, you know, I had an attitude that said he should stay out of the industry and work in a job that he absolutely hates and stay the hell away from me. That's a pretty selfish attitude. Okay, and the last thing in the fourth column is self-seeking. I look at that as a self-seeking action. Mine was I refrained from communicating with him. I would not return his phone calls. I didn't want to give him any information about his employment contract because if he read the fine print, he would see that it was okay for him to open his program. But I never returned his phone calls to answer his questions because I didn't want him to know that. Pretty self-seeking, huh? Self-seeking. That is resentment inventory, ladies and gentlemen. And if you want to have some fun, you can look for your hypocrisy and ask yourself, when was the last time I did what's in column two? Like, you're pissed at this person for this reason. When was the last time you did that to someone?
Half an hour ago.
We call that the realization. Yeah. It's just an action, so you can describe it any way you want. What was the self-seeking action that you engaged in? Clear as mud, everybody, right? All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is resentment inventory, and I turn it over to my buddy, Mike B.
So, before we look at this fear deal, let's look at this ego deal a little bit more. All right? I'm just going to read a couple of things out of Deepak's 20 Spiritual Lessons for Creating the Life You Want. And it talks about the birth of the ego, and I'm just going to read little phrases and see if you can identify with what he's talking about. He says, the ego is a sense of I. Birth of the ego is the birth of duality. The beginning of opposition. And he takes us all the way back to being a baby.
Duality for me, please?
Two. Duality means two. Two of you. And he talks about it in the essence of, in the beginning, a baby will respond to its mother's love and nurturing, a source outside itself. While the baby was inside, he was pure. But once he comes outside, he begins to develop his own personality, right? So he begins to take on outside deals to bring security, to bring self-worth, right? Exactly. At first, there is no separation, right? So we're going to keep it simple. The baby and the mother are one before it comes into this world, right? Once it comes into this world, it begins to attach itself to its mother for love and nurturing, feeding, warmth, all the stuff outside of him. What happens with that is that that begins to multiply in a number of ways. And an ego begins to form itself, edging God out. I talked to you guys earlier in step two about God created man and then he blew the breath of life into him. So if God created you and blew his breath into you, what does that mean?
God is in you.
Huh? Is in you. And you are what? You are God and God is you. And what happens is that we lose that somewhere along the line. And what we do, and I believe this is everybody, you don't have to be alcoholic or addict. You begin to develop this ego in a number of ways. The birth of the ego, you become addicted to the world. How? Selfish, self-esteem, who I grow to know that I am. Pride. How others have to look at me and treat me in order for me to be okay. I begin to put my trust in getting things, what I want. And then I develop a deal of believing that there's certain things that I need in order to live. How many believe that in order for you to be comfortable, you need a certain amount of money? Be honest. Right. BS. They got monks in caves in Europe that are at perfect peace. Don't have a penny. Perfect peace. Personal relations and sex relations, how I begin to look at you in order for me to be okay. Y'all with me? So I begin to develop this over a period of time, and actually it begins from childbirth. It says, I develop a world outside of me. It says, ego knows that the unknown is the source of fear. So what does it do? It begins to attach itself to things out here in order to bring security, right? And when it runs up against something that it don't know anything about, a fear develops. We're going to look at fear in a minute. ego offers no possibility of fulfillment at all. It is controlling and loveless. The ego says, listen to me. Grab all you can for yourself. This way lies happiness. Anybody with me? Let me get enough money. Let me get the right woman. Let me get the right job. Treat me a certain way. You don't treat me a certain way. You with me? So unless that's treated, that just continues to build. And what happens? If you're lucky, you wind up in Cocaine Anonymous. Or AA, if you're lucky. But what happens? The majority of people never make it here. So they have to live with this unconquerable ego because it drives them. It drives them in what? It drives them in resentment. It drives them in fear. And then it drives them in its relations with people. Not just the opposite sex, but with the same sex. As the ego grows, it smothers the spirit. It smothers my natural deal of how I was perceived, conceived to be, as directed by God. So what happens? I get to a place that it has to be eliminated. And the purpose of the 12 steps is the smashing of the ego. It's a divinely inspired process. Your sponsor can't do it. A group can't do it. Who am I talking to? Who? No, who am I talking to? Your sponsor can't do it. A group can't do it. Your wife can't do it. Your husband, who am I talking to? Huh? No, I'm talking to someone. Who I've been talking to all weekend? No, who I've been talking to? Who? The mad dog. I ain't talking about the poopy. The mad dog don't have to do this stuff. I mean, the poopy don't have to do this stuff. The mad dog has got to have something with some umph. Something that makes them sit up and say, no, I said I wasn't perfect. No, S-H-I-T. This is what I've been up against all my life. I must remember that everybody that's in our rooms is not the same. They tell you don't take inventories. Take inventories. You might be hanging out with somebody that don't give a hoot owl about what we do in the rooms and in recovery. They can have a Band-Aid and be satisfied with the Band-Aid. They're perfectly fine. And you dying because you know something's wrong. You've been coming to meetings. You got a sponsor. You half-assedly moving through the steps. You doing what they told you to do. 90 meetings, 90 days, get a sponsor, read the book, get a commitment. Something's still wrong. What is going on here? Most likely you've been dominated by that which has run your life, your entire life. Because you came to see us as only one aspect of treatment. So I just thought I'd read that. As long as the ego is present, the achiever will be present. As long as the ego is present, the achiever will be present. Meaning, I need more. I'm never satisfied. Have you heard that before?
Yeah.
I ain't never satisfied, man. You got money in the bank. You got food in the refrigerator, but because you ain't got steaks in there, something's wrong. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you. The ego grows. As the ego grows, it smothers the spirit. What is this? Language of the heart, or what? A spiritual retreat. So as much as we can, we want to tie it into the spiritual aspect of recovery. I must be rid of self in order to do what? To breathe. So now I get into a fact-finding, fact-facing process. I look at resentment. For a lot of us, it's only by the grace of God that we're here, because we've been living with resentment the majority of our life. Big Book tells us resentment is the number one offender. But resentment is fueled by what?
Fear.
Fear. And when you read the book, it says fear is an evil and corroding thread that touches every area of my life. And when you do a thorough inventory and you look at those resentments, you'll see how fear has touched every single one of them. So you wrote a resentment, right? What I want you to do now is look at the resentment you wrote, look at the name in the first column, look at the resentment that you wrote, and make me a list of fears from that resentment. What are you afraid of? What was your resentment?
Mine?
Yeah.
Hold on.
Oh, wanted to start a recovery program. What was he afraid of? I'm just saying that. But I want you to take the resentment that you wrote, look at it, and ask yourself, what am I really afraid of? And you should have a number of fears related to that resentment. Not just one, a number of them. So give it a shot. Oh. You got 2 minutes. Write them down. Whatever comes, write it. Don't scrutinize it. Don't mess with it. Don't consider. Oh, no, that's not what's happening. Write it down. Fear of being alone, fear of being being homeless, fear of dying, fear of being unloved. Whatever the fear is, write it down. Make a list. You got a minute. So now I'm going to use one person, to read me their list of fears with that one resentment. One person, and I'm going to show you what to do with that list of fears. Can I get a volunteer? I promise I'll be nice.
You got one right there.
Okay.
So fear, relapse, death, losing my kids, my marriage failing, being alone, what's the change?
What's the resentment?
My husband. What's the resentment?
Right.
My mom is
someone. No, just one. I just want one. He told you to write one. What'd you write? 50?
Huh? He doesn't believe I'm mad.
Okay. Doesn't believe. And what's the fear? Read the fears out to me one by one.
Relapse.
Okay. Okay. So fear relapse. Is fear relapse connected with fear death?
Yes.
Cross out fear relapse. So now you have fear death. What's the next one?
Losing my kids.
Losing your kids. If you lose your kids the way you feel now, you feel like you're going to die? That you can't live without your kids?
Yes.
Okay. So cross out fear of losing my kids. What's the next one?
My marriage failing.
Okay. If your marriage fails and you're alone, think you might die?
No.
Huh?
No.
You don't think ultimately that you'll die? Are you supported in some type of way, a dependence on that to live? Your marriage? You're not?
No, I'm not. I used to think that way.
Huh?
I used to feel that way.
Okay, well, that's what I'm talking about. You still,
yes,
whenever. Right.
Yes, definitely.
All right, so cross it out.
Yeah.
What's the next one?
My reputation.
Your reputation. If you lose your reputation and you're reduced to a zero, wouldn't you might as well just die?
Yes.
Right. You all with me?
No.
Huh?
No.
You're not? Okay, let me finish with her. No, not physically die.
Like you'll just feel
emotionally, spiritually, however.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Any more? Fears.
Just financial insecurity.
Okay. And if you don't have enough money and you can't live and be comfortable, I might as well just die, right? Fear died. I might die, right? What if I get sick and I can't go to the doctor and it's a life-threatening disease, right? Mm-hmm. Is that fear of death?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Cross out fear of finance. What are you left with? No, you're left with one. What is it?
Yeah.
Fear of death. I want you to write me 2-3 lines on why you're afraid of dying. That's the next exercise. Break your list down, end it up with one fear, write me 2-3 lines on why am I afraid. Book talks about it on page 68. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper even though we had no resentment. In connection with them, we asked ourselves why I had them. Why am I afraid? That's fear inventory. That's simple. A lot of times, people I work with, I'll have them break it down. Depends on who I'm working with. 3 fears, 2 fears. A lot of times, it can be broken down. The majority of the time, it can be broken down to 1 fear that dominates you and drives you. If I don't get a wife, I'll be useless, I'll be worthless, I'll be alone, I'll die alone. Sex inventory. That's just fear inventory. We finished with it. Couple lines, why am I afraid for that 1 fear? Y'all with me? Hello, y'all looking at me. Y'all with me?
Yeah.
Anybody not understand what we just did? My fears can be broken down to 1 fear. The majority of the times. If you can't get it down to 1, most definitely you can get it down to 1 to 3. Most definitely. Because they connect. You with me? Fear of confrontation, because it's fear of being hurt, fear of being hurt, fear of being in the hospital, fear of being in the hospital, fear of being mistreated by doctors, wrong medication, fear of dying. Fear of relapse, fear of dying. Sex inventory. We're going to move to the middle of page 69. Yeah, interesting they put it on 69, huh?
Yeah.
I've always thought that. Quite a sense of humor. And basically what you're going to do with sex inventory is you're going to answer 9 questions. So what I'd like you to do, if the individual that you put in your resentment inventory, if not someone that you've had sex with or sexual relations, I want you to list 1 person. And you would make a list of sexual partners. I also use this as a personal inventory for family members, friends, associates, employees. But we're going to use it specifically the way the book says, a sex inventory. You're going to put that person's name and you're going to answer these 9 questions. Where was I selfish? I was selfish because. Where was I dishonest? Where was I inconsiderate?
And it's on page, they're all listed right there on page 69.
On page 69. 69, middle paragraph. I'm not talking loud enough again. Huh? Middle paragraph, 69. It says, we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid? That's three individual questions that you look at. Next question is, whom did I hurt? That's not you. I'm going to say it again. It's not you. It's the husband of the woman that you were hanging out with. Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy? So did I arouse jealousy? Another question. Did I arouse suspicion? Another question. Did I arouse bitterness? Another question. Where was I at fault? And the last question is, what should I have done instead?
Bless you.
Nine questions for sex inventory. That's all we're going to do with it here, but you also can have them write a small paragraph about that relationship if it boils over and there's more feelings involved in it. But we're just going to answer the nine questions. Y'all with me? Did you do it?
No.
No, my man. Did you do it?
Not yet.
Not yet? Okay. Anybody not do it and not understand?
It's going to take them a minute probably to get all those nine questions.
Huh?
It's going to take them a minute to answer.
No, just small and precise and to the point. Sally Sue, I had sex with. Where was I considerate? I was inconsiderate because I didn't care about what she wanted. Where was I dishonest? I was dishonest because I told her I loved her and I really didn't. Where was I selfish? I was selfish because I was only concerned with what I want, what I wanted. I didn't care about what she wanted. Whom did I hurt? I hurt her kids because her kids knew we were in a relationship. You don't have to write all this. You just write, I hurt her kids. In a fifth step, you can talk about it, but you keep it brief and to the point. Did I arouse jealousy? Yeah, I aroused jealousy by calling other women on the phone in front of her and talking about other women to her. Did I arouse suspicion? Yes, I aroused suspicion by sneaking outside and listening to my cell phone when it rang. Did I arouse bitterness? Yeah, I aroused bitterness because she found out that I was messing with somebody else along with her. Where was I at fault? I was at fault because I used her, took advantage of her. She was a piece of meat, and I really had no concern for her at all. And for you women, it's the complete opposite. Because y'all don't get off the hook. You know that, right?
How about the bitterness if she doesn't find out?
Huh?
The bitterness, how about if she didn't find out?
So, I did not arouse bitterness. On those three questions, if you didn't, just no, I didn't. What should I have done instead? I probably shouldn't have messed with her in the first place. Clear?
Can I say one thing?
Sure.
On the what you should have done instead... What's your ideal? That's sort of foreshadowing how you want to behave in the next relationship. So I would invite you to write down the opposite of what you did. What I should have done instead was probably not what I did, right? This can be really simple. Mm-hmm. If you've got a lot of quote-unquote negative behaviors in your sex inventory, what you should have done instead is just the opposite of all the things you did.
So what you're going to do next, after you do that, you're going to look at the next line. It said, in this way we shape the same and sound ideal for future sex life. So I want you to look at those nine questions you answered. And I want you to write me a sentence or two on what you would like an ideal sex life to look like. If we had more time and we were working one-on-one, you'd write more. But for the sake of this group and the time we have...
You want to give them the fifth step instructions after dinner? Have them do a fifth step.
Yeah, what time is it?
We got dinner in 10 minutes.
Damn, we just ate. One or two lines, sex idea. Sane and sound sex idea. Another way I have them write a sane and sex idea is go to page 52 and use R9 to be doublements and flippable. But here's a piece that I did not recognize, and this is for somebody in here. And I'm saying this for somebody because I know you probably are just like me, or just like I was. It says, we ask God to shape our ideals and help us to live up to them. Remember always that our sex powers are God-given. That piece got away from me for a very long time. That my sex powers are God-given. So what? Sex is what? Thank you. Who said that? Right here. It's right here. Right here. Everything you need is right here. All the answers you need is right here. Ain't about what you think. Remember where the problem centers. Where?
In our mind.
In my mind. So Mr. on 12th Street, I still haven't talked about him, huh?
No.
No, he's going to come along with a bunch of BS as to what the answer is. 9 times out of 10, any answer you need is right here in this book. You don't have to go looking for it. So, that's it on sex. Talks about God alone can judge my sex situation. Stay out of people's sex business. Leave them alone. Let them do whatever they need to do. My first sponsor, never told me to get in a relationship in the first year. He told me to get in as many relationships as you want to. Just when the shit hits the fan, be able to accept the responsibility for what you did. That's one of them deals in AA and CA that we just, one of them things we just throw out that somebody made up. Have your experience. With sex, you'll have one too. With relationship, you'll have one. The next two things that plague the spirit after drugs and alcohol is sex and money. They will twist you inside out. It's not by coincidence. I'm telling you, man, these guys that wrote this book, it's got to be God-inspired, divinely inspired. It has to be. Anyway, that's it for sex. The next thing, and it talks about it, and then we're going to go eat. It's over on page 75. It says, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past, deep, dark secrets. If you like, because what you're going to do when we come back, you're going to do a fifth step with somebody. You're going to partner up with somebody and read what you wrote to them.
Before we come back.
Before we come back?
Yeah, have them just have them on fifth step before we come back.
Okay.
If you guys, I mean, we have to start a little later. It's fine. We can push it back. It won't take you but 5 to 10 minutes to do this.
You think?
Or do you want to do it at the beginning of the next session?
Or do you want to do it at the beginning of the next session?
Eat.
You want to eat first?
Yeah.
Okay, group conscious. How many want to eat first? I don't want to eat. I ate enough today. How many people would rather wait and do it now? How many would like to do it now? Okay. So write down a deep, dark secret that you've never told anybody.
Oh.
What was that?
Said,
oh,
yeah. A deep, dark secret that you've never told anybody.
I didn't know he was going to pull that one out.
We got it now, huh? Or write down a deep, dark secret that you've told somebody before. Okay?
And now, are we doing
just for practice.
Are we all three?
Huh?
Are we doing the all three?
Yeah, when you finish, read all three inventories, the resentment that T had you write, the fear that you ended up with, and why you're afraid, and the nine questions attached to somebody's name. A sentence or one sentence sex ideal, same sound sex ideal, and a deep dark secret. That's the crux of fourth step inventory. Now there's something else that I do with people. Everybody doesn't do it. But I have you look at your fourth column. I have you look at the end of your fear inventory. And then I have you look at your sex conduct and your sex inventory. And I have you write me something on life in the land, what's your name?
Allison.
Life in the land of Allison. How would it be to live with somebody that you see in that fourth column, that you see in that fear inventory, and that you see in that sex inventory? How would it be to live with somebody like that? Would you want to live with somebody like that?
Yeah.
Would you want to subject yourself or subject somebody to live with you and how they would feel with living with somebody like that? Life in the land of Mikey. First time I wrote it, it blew me away. It's like I don't want no parts of that guy.
It feels like I'm justifying others' behavior.
Huh?
It feels like I'm justifying others' behavior.
No, you're not justifying others' behavior. You're taking a look at you.
What's it like when people live in your universe? There's certain things they're going to have to do.
Right.
In order to live in your universe. They're going to have to live by my value system. They're going to have to view things the same way I view them. They're going to have to show up on time. I'm not going to have to show up on time. Right? They're going to have to do all the work to get all the results. I only got to do some of the work to get all the results. There is a certain way that people have to operate if they want to exist in my world, when I'm the center of the universe. And that's what that exercise is about.
So the sense I'm getting is we're moving into learning how to forgive, correct?
No. No. You're just getting a peek at what it looks like to live with somebody like you. And would you want to live with somebody like you? It's that simple. It's not complicated.
Just if you look at your fourth column,
selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid, and you look at it in depth, most likely what it's going to do is continue to repeat itself. And as it repeats itself, you see that there's moral standards and values by which you live your life that's, I'm going to say, fucked up. And to live with me would like be an atrocity. How could anybody ever live with me? And you see as a result of your patterns and the way you live, that's why you push so many people away. Joe used to say when he looked at his sex inventory, what he realized after writing inventory is that he was the only one in the relationship. Nobody else mattered. Nothing else mattered. Everything was on his standards. No wonder they left. Little secret. My last marriage. Left Vegas. We were getting a divorce. We was going to split stuff down. I moved to Austin, Texas. I'm sitting in the room doing a piece of work with Mom. And I'm sitting there, and Spirit said, you know what? If I was married to you, I would have left you too. I would have divorced your ass too. That's what we're looking at. Who am I really? Or who is it that I'm not that I need to become? In order for me to get to that place, I need to see what I'm doing out here that's unacceptable. In living a healthy, prosperous, happy, joyous, free life. And actually what happens, and we talked about it, the acquisition of power, it becomes unacceptable to be powerless. How do you know that? Because somebody in here, you've been to umpteen treatment programs. And every time you've been in treatment, you came out with an idea on how you're going to run your life, right? Right. Did it work?
No.
No. Exactly. So, we're going to do it now or we're going to do it later? What y'all want to do?
Can you explain exactly what you want us to do again? I'm sorry.
What
you're
I want
doing
you
fist
to do,
steps. You're just
you're
doing
just
fist steps.
Do a mini fist step. Step. That's all. You're going to pair up. No, you're not pairing up. I want you to pair up with somebody different that you don't know. When I have my people do inventory, when I have my people do, excuse me, when I have my people do fifth steps, they do a fifth step with me, then I send them out to usually do a fifth step with three other people. And they do it as directed by spirit. The first three names that come, whether you want to read to them or not, that's who you read to. How free do you want to be? It's about transparency. So I want you to hook up with somebody that you don't know. Trust spirit, trust God, and read this mini inventory to them and see what happens. If I hadn't done it, I wouldn't be asking you to do it. Anything that we've shared with you this weekend, it's not anything we haven't done. So pick somebody and read it, then let's go eat. Right quick. Oh, you want to talk to me? You sure?
Yeah.
You sure you want to talk to me? Alright. Where's your paper? Y'all can pick tea if you want or whoever.